I'm not going to be there this morning. I'm going to be right here because in just a second, I'm going to, and Zach, when you get back there, turn my gain down a little bit. I'm echoing. In just a second, I'm going to invite some individuals up that some of you know. Many of you do not. They are individuals from Hope and Home Foster Care that we invited to come and share with us about the mission that they are doing and the work that they are doing through the foster care system. And we have, as a church, believe it or not, been partnering with them now for almost a year and slowly adding to that and how we serve them. Part of it is now giving them space in our facilities downstairs to store overflow items for the kids that come through Hope and Home. But also we're going to be giving them a space to have a monthly meeting support group for parents. And this all started after we went to the annual meeting for the RGBA last year out at Majestic Baptist, where several individuals from Hope and Home were there to share about the work that they are doing and how churches or families could partner with them. And hearing that, I brought it back to Blenda to say, hey, can we do something for them, whether that be provide an entire Thanksgiving meal because it was just coming up on Thanksgiving, or take on a family and provide, you know, a few more Christmas gifts, especially to this child who has been placed into a foster home. Let's do something. And Blenda's like, of course. And then a few of the ladies took that and ran with it and actually went over to the space that they occupy at Lake Avenue and started digging into the stuff, organizing it for them. The ladies at Hope and Home had no idea that our ladies would do that. And it's just been a snowball effect of things that we can do to support them. And when I talked with leadership about making August Mission Month, I said, let's emphasize Hope and Home on a Sunday to share what they're doing. So I'm going to invite those up that are here from Hope and Home to come and join me on the stage in one of the stools. We have plenty, so Esther, come on up. And Ross is the director. And then we have Myra and Esther here as well. Myra and Esther are more of the contacts with us than Ross is, but Ross is really the man in charge of everything and carrying out the vision, but also making sure that these ladies have the resources they need. So I'm going to turn it over to Ross just to share a little bit about who he is and the heart behind Hope and Home. So I'll give you that.
Well, thank you so much, and it's great to be here. I really do appreciate you guys having us. I echo the comments earlier from Zach. It's just a beautiful day outside, and sometimes it's hard to go to church on a beautiful day, so I appreciate you all being here. Again, I'm Ross Wright. I'm the executive director of Hope and Home, and we got started 25 years ago. And with me today is Esther and Myra. They're the program managers down here in Pueblo. We got called down here a year ago from the Department of Human Services, who said we need foster care down here. We don't have enough services, so they invited us down. And for those of you who are not familiar with foster care is a government program that places children into families when, for one reason or another, those children can't be in the homes that they're from. And that means the government steps in and removes them from wherever they are for lots of different reasons and then places them in a temporary home with a foster parent. Colorado's unique in that it allows Christian nonprofits like Hope and Home to work with the government to do this. So we are a private nonprofit Christian organization working with the government to find families and support them so they can take kids into their homes. And that's what we're doing. And of course, the Freibergs are here in your church, and they heard the calling a year ago, and they stepped up and became foster parents through us. So we certainly appreciate what Zach and Aaron have done. And you've got a great resource in terms of knowing how it works by just talking to them. I will tell you that 25 years ago, I joined Hope and Home because We were started at a First Presbyterian Church, and First Presbyterian Church had a guy in it, a member of the church, an elder in the church. His name was Dr. George Cresswell, and Dr. Cresswell saw a lot of foster kids in his practice, and he thought that the deal they got wasn't very good. He wanted it to be better, and he had this crazy idea that, you know, what if we pulled in the church? What if the church got involved, and what if we found families within our church that could take care of these kids? So he took that crazy idea to the Department of Human Services, and he knew of a couple of kids that they couldn't find homes for. One girl named Daphne, she was 5 years old, and she was living in a residential treatment center, and he was her doctor, and he wanted to find a home for Daphne. So he went to the church, and he found people in his church that would do it. Went to the Department of Human Services, he said, no thanks, we got this covered, we don't need your help. And he was really frustrated because she was living in a cinder block facility on the south part of town, locked up in a residential program, and she didn't need to be there. There were families that were willing to take her in. So somehow he got the message to the local judge, Judge Cisneros, and when the Department of Human Services showed up for court, Judge Cisneros asked if the Department of Services had found a home, and they said no. And she said, well, I heard that Dr. Cresswell found a home. And the Department of Human Services said, yeah, but it's not a certified home, it doesn't count. She says, well, don't tell me how to do my job. And she was notorious for saying things like that. She was about 5 feet tall, young Hispanic judge, and when she rolled the glasses down on the end of her nose and looked over them, you knew you were in trouble. And she looked at the Department of Services and said, don't tell me how to do my job. I am court ordering that this child go with Dr. Cresswell and be in a foster home with him. Never happened before. Didn't make sense. It wasn't licensed. And then she looked at Dr. Cresswell and said, I'm court ordering you to start an agency. And that was the beginning of Hope and Home. A couple of months later, he called me up and said, help. I had worked with him before. I'm a hospital administrator by training, and he had been in my hospital as one of my doctors, so I came and joined him for 3 months only, and that was 25 years ago. So I have been there ever since, and it has been my heart and my soul. I think I got really connected with Hope at Home because when I was 10, my father had a sudden heart attack and passed away right in front of my eyes at a swimming pool in California. And it turned my life upside down. And I was just my mom and me and my little sister at that point. And a group of friends of my father's surrounded us and took us in. And we lived with them for a little while, and they helped put us back on our feet. And I've never forgotten that, the importance of having somebody that can step into a person's life when they're in a time of need and help them not just get back on their feet, but then to let them go, to let them have their life, not make them dependent on other people forever. And that's what I like about Hope at Home, because that's what we get to do. We get to step into people's lives when they're in a time of trouble and help them reset that life, whether it's the family the kids are coming from, or if they can't go back to that family, just the child that's coming to us. Our job is to step into that gap and be there for them during that time of need. And so that's what Hope at Home does, and we're just thrilled that you guys are involved with us. We are called down here by the Department of Human Services because there are way too many kids and not enough families. And I was on the phone with the leader of the program just a couple of days ago, and she said they still have what are called CWAPs. You're going to learn a new word, CWAP. I'd never heard the word CWAP until I was talking to her. It means child without placement. That means there's not enough foster homes, so they don't have anywhere for a kid to go, and so they have to actually live in the Department of Human Services conference room. And we don't want that to happen, and that's why they called us down here and have asked us to recruit foster families, and that's our job. We look for people like the Freibergs that will take in kids, and then we look for communities that will wrap around them, because that's what makes a Christian foster care program different than the government, is the government can't do what we can do. And when I say we, I mean the big we. They can't do what the church can do. We can wrap around children in ways that the government can't do. So that's a little bit about who we are and why we're here, and we are thrilled to work with you in any way that you want to work with us. Having a space to do support groups here is fantastic. And we're always overloaded with stuff that people give us, which is another wonderful gift. So thank you for providing a room for both of those.
Back on, there we go. You touched on a few things, and I shared a little bit about what we're doing to support Hope and Home, but what else is the local church doing to support Hope and Home? And I'm talking local church in general, knowing that there are vast local churches, not just here in Pueblo, but even in Colorado Springs, where y'all are based out of. So what sort of support are y'all receiving from the local church in general?
The most important thing is just making sure that we all know about Hope and Home and that we are active in prayer for the organization and its children. These are tough children in tough circumstances, and they really need your prayers. And so just being aware, awareness is the most important thing. And then beyond that, it is so helpful that people step up and say, how can I either be a foster parent or volunteer to support a foster parent? It really happens at the grassroots level. It's more about, you know, what do we do on a daily basis with these kids? Then on top of that, we do things like we have a toy drive at Christmas, making sure that every single kid gets toys. We do drives for school supplies. Anything like that is helpful. And I know that you've been working with Linda, and that has been wonderful. And already doing these sorts of things. And so it's the practical stuff that makes parenting hard, as you all know. And so it's the practical stuff that really helps us.
So, and I want to give Myra and Esther a little bit of a chance to talk here, too. You touched on something about supporting a foster family, and I want to turn this that question over to Myra and Esther of how can we better support a foster family, considering the fact that we have one here at our church, and I know they may not want us to do much because they are very independent individuals, but just having that close connection, what are some ways that we as a local church can better support a local foster family? Myra's got it first.
I'm Myra. I'm the program manager for Hope and Home Pueblo, and first off, I want to thank the ladies. We call them the ladies of Aberdeen. That's how we refer to them, and they have supported us a lot. Just not with items, but support to volunteer. You guys have wrapped gifts for us, and those are the simple things that you can do. You can join us at our toy drive by helping organize presents. We are restructuring our office at Lake Avenue, and we'll need help organizing our closet. There's a lot of simple things you can do if you can't foster. You can provide a meal for a family who gets a placement in the middle of the night, and they need breakfast the next morning, or they might need some pajamas from Walmart because a child, nine times out of ten, these kids come with what they have on them. So socks, underwear, coats, especially now during winter, those are tangible things that you can do to support these families like the Freibergs, or even just volunteering to sit with a child at a doctor's appointment while they go, or there's tons of different things that you can do to support our families here in Pueblo.
You have anything, Esther?
Sure. Very surprised that I'm actually up here. I usually am not. But I mean, one of the things that you guys responded to very quickly, and it might not sound like a lot, but was a lot to us, was when we decided to do a big event in Pueblo and take all of our families and kids to the zoo. And any of the events that we offer are completely free, so they just get to show up, bring everybody and show up. And we had reached out to Belinda and the group and asked them if you guys could put together some goodie bags for us to be able to give the kids. And I mean, like within a week, we had them. And they were great, and they were cute, and they were meaningful. And the really fun part was that you actually made too many. So even when our group went home, we just started walking around and looking for kids. And just like, would you like a goodie bag? And would you, you know, and I said, boy, we really should have put Hope and Home on those bags or something.
I would throw out one more thing, if I may. How old is the family in the Corals that we just licensed? 74. We just licensed a foster family that are 74 years old. And they're in Pueblo. And a lot of people think, well, I'm too old, or my family's too busy, or it's too hard, or I can't imagine doing this on a long-term basis. breakfast families that can receive a child that comes in out of a tough situation just long enough to go somewhere else. You can do that. You can do what's just called respite, where you take a child for a couple of days. And the great thing about respite is they're always on their best behavior during respite. And so you can have kids during that time. You can just take little kids. You can just take babies. You can just take short-term placements, and you're never too old or too young. We have folks that are 21 years old, and we have folks that we just licensed that were 74 years old. So I want to invite everybody, don't think that you can't do it just because your family is full, or you might be too old, or you might be too young.
So speaking of just licensing a family that's in their 70s, what's that process like for a family to go through with Hope and Home? Because I know it's a lot more state credentialing to make sure that they qualify from the state level. But what's that process like?
Well, the first thing you do is you call Myra. And Myra and Esther is our licensing specialist down here. Myra is our program manager down here. And they meet with you, and they talk to you about it, and you have about an hour and a half long meeting with them where they get a real sense of what it is that you want to do and help you understand and answer any questions you have. Then you go through a bunch of paperwork, just like you would if you're getting a mortgage to your house or something like that. It's about this thick, and it takes about two or three months, and you have to take some online classes. But most of our families say it's a lot less than they think it's going to be. It's not as hard as you think it will be. There's a lot of paperwork, and there should be. A child's going to be living in your home. So, one of the questions that always comes up is, what if I have some sort of thing on my record? We're looking for real people. We're not looking for perfect people. Everybody's got something. Everybody's got an uncle or an aunt or a brother or sister that's done something to some situation. We're not perfect. So we are not looking for perfect people. So never think that because there's something in your background or someone in your family or something that's going on, that means you can't do it. We're looking for families that love children, and we're not looking for perfect people by any means.
So you shared that this is a Christian nonprofit. So where does the funding come from?
The funding comes from a couple of places. One place is the government does pay a small amount to foster parents for being foster parents. So if you're a foster parent, you'll get about $1,000 a month stipend because kids are expensive. You need that. If you try to buy a pair of blue jeans, you know what I'm talking about. Raising kids is expensive. So foster parents get about $1,000 a month. And the organization Hope and Home gets a per diem amount as well to help take care of kids. And then beyond that, we raise about $1 million a year out of the Christian community. And so we have donors, and we hold fundraisers, and we do golf tournaments and top golf events and stuff like that. And so fortunately, some people think about us for monthly giving, and others give gifts at the end of the year. But it's always wonderful to get financial gifts because we need that to keep going.
Yeah, because that's not just salaries. That's providing the training that the families need. What sort of cost goes into that training that Freiburg went through not too long ago?
I actually looked at these numbers just recently, and it costs us about $7,000 a family to license a family. We're going to try and license 100 families this year. So you can do the math on that if you're better than I am at math. 7,000 times 100. So it's going to cost us $700,000 to license all of our families. And that's because you have people like Esther and Myra doing the licensing. And then we have to pay for things like fingerprints and background checks and all these different kinds of things, CPR classes and the training itself. So there is a lot of expenses that go into that. And then there's ongoing support. We do support groups where you come to support group and get to be with other families that are doing what you're doing. And we have full child care there available for all the kids, and we make it fun for them. And we have food for everybody. So, yeah, there's a lot of expenses that go with it. But fortunately, we have a very generous community, and every little bit helps.
And how much of that is actually put on the prospective foster parents?
None. The foster parents don't. Do they pay for any part of that? I think they pay for some fingerprints. I think that's all that they have to pay for. Do you know the amount?
The amount is $54. $54 per person for the fingerprints, but that's
live this gray space and is created, and really was created for us because we're a faith-based organization working with kids in the government system. And so it meets both of our needs. It meets the trauma-informed side, but it also comes at it from a Christian grace-based perspective.
That's huge, especially for our church, as we're looking to serve our community better. It's the key word there is grace. Extending grace to, they're going to be difficult to love, but aren't we all difficult
work with us is to look inside yourself and really ask yourself, what is it that we like to do? What is it that we are good at? What is our thing? We work with a lot of different churches, and the churches that have a sense of what their what resonates with you, and then bring that to us. So if a church is really good at working with wood, we have people that are good, you know, they're good with their hands. We work with the Eastside Church of Christ in Colorado Springs, and they have a lot of people that are good with wood. And I never thought about that, but they repair a lot of stuff that gets broken in our homes. If you're good at that kind of stuff, that's wonderful. If you're more about cooking, or if you're more about producing things, or childcare, if you love coming out and working with us, we always need people to work directly with kids. Anything at all that you do that is special to you is probably something we value, and we'll find a way to take advantage of that. The important thing to realize is that it is the healing power of a healthy community that is the most powerful thing in a child's life. Medications are important, medical treatment is important, therapy is important, but the thing that changes lives is the thing that changes lives is the power of the Holy Spirit as it manifests in community and surrounds a child, and they get to experience normal life. Kids that come into foster care get better because they're surrounded by people that love on them, and that's the most important thing. What is the vehicle for that? There's lots of vehicles. Having someone that will take a kid to play basketball, someone that shows up and just works with kids in support groups. There's just lots of ways of doing it. So I would say to you, ask yourself what it is that you feel is kind of your special niche. What do you guys like to do? And then share that with us.
Thank you so much. And just so you all know, they will still be, they'll stick around a little bit after service. They've got a table in the back. If you want to talk more to them, they'll be here. Get to know them, because we're going to continue to support them. It's actually part of our budget. That we have a line item designated in our annual budget for Hope and Home. And so we are a gift to them in some way, shape, or form, whether that be the ladies that go over and organize the facility over at Lake Avenue, and what Hope and Home has been given graciously by Scott and the team over maybe, still a little bit of reverb. No idea what's going on, other than there's a bug in our system that wants to keep us from talking. And so I'm excited for this. I'm excited to support them. And part of that is we do want to love on them through our giving. And so if you feel led, as Ron comes up to take care of our offertory prayer, please give to Hope and Home. You can give to the church, who will then give on your behalf. That way it is reported on your yearly statement. But it takes a village, and they have a village at their disposal, starting here with Aberdeen. So thank you, Ross, Myra, and Esther, for being here today. Look forward to the many more conversations.